I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, the non-Hugo Award winner. And this is episode number 206 of the Functional Nerds podcast. And John, you didn't win a Hugo.
I did not Sad. Win one. I'm going to start introducing myself as non-Hugo winner, John Anilio. Non-Hugo nominated, John Anilio.
I thought it was funny because Murr did actually tweet out that I was going to be insufferable. I'm like, what? I wasn't before?
And that's the way I look at it. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award-winning podcaster. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music at johnanilio.com and follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And today, you would think we would have had this guest on before, but we haven't. And that's Sarah Chorn. She's a blogger and I wrote this down, Sarah. A blogger and a prolific book reviewer. Prolific. You can find her work at bookwormblues.net, as well as her Special Needs in a Strange World column at SF Signal. And you can follow her on Twitter at bookwormblues. Sarah, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah, she read 267 books yesterday.
Not even close. No, I think this year I'm up to like 113.
That's still crazy. 113.
Now, you know, let's get right into that. Because, so, now I know it's going to depend on the length of what the word count on a book is. But what's your, you know, typical, in terms of how long it takes you to read something? You know, what's your range? And I know that, again, it's the book, how much you're into it, and how fast you're reading it. But, like, what's your range in terms of how quickly you can finish reading a book?
You know, if I don't like the book, I read it a lot faster. Because okay. I want to get it over with. So if I read a book in a day, that's a pretty bad sign. Mm-hmm. But I can read a book in a day. If I like the book, I might never finish it. It just depends on how much I like it, because I don't want it to end, and I kind of just drag it on and on and on. But usually I can pound out between 3 and 5 in a week.
Let me ask you this then. So you read Words of Radiance by Brandon Sanderson, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. How long did it take you to finish Words of Radiance?
Oh, that one was like a week and a half.
A week and a half?
Yeah.
Patrick, you know how long it took me to get through Words of Radiance?
4 months.
Almost 3, I think. Now, do you read multiple books at the same time?
Yeah, I consider myself a mood reader. I have a few books going depending on how I think I'm going to be feeling at that time. So I have one that's popcorn. That doesn't matter. I'll probably never review it. But I read that before I go to bed, because if I don't, I'll dream about stuff all night, and that just keeps me up. But and then I'll, you know, have a sci-fi book going because I like it, and then a fantasy book going because sometimes I want to read about people dying in really graphic ways. And, you know, I just have a few going all the time, usually about 4 to 5.
So John, I saw this bio thing on Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. And in Monticello, he had a book carousel. And it allowed him to read 4 books at once. And I imagine, you know, Sarah's house has 12 of those.
That would be awesome.
And she just, has different books on them and just spins them around and reads the ones she wants to read.
I have a follow-up question to that, Sarah, but I don't know to Patrick's point, are you both familiar with the comedian Brian Regan?
No.
Brian Regan is one of my favorite comedians, and Brian Regan he's a clean comic for the most part. So there's not a lot of swearing or graphic stuff, but he's probably the funniest comedian. The interesting thing, he's had a couple of specials on TV, but he has this massive following, because he'll play like theaters and sell out theaters and stuff. But I saw him, oh, it's a while back now, maybe it's almost 10 years ago now, and he did a bit about, I don't know if it's on any of his specials or anything, but he did a bit about that the book carousel. Was it Edison you said or Jefferson?
Jefferson.
Yeah. Jefferson, right? Jefferson, and he did this whole thing where he like acted it out and was like, you know, who needs to read that many books? And he was like sort of acting up by like turning the carousel. It was so funny. Like the physicalness of it was so funny. It really cracked up. But I'll have to see if that bit exists on YouTube or something, and I'll have to send out that link. But that was one of my questions, Sarah. So you say you'll read like four or five books at the same time. Is it all paper books? Or do you read ebooks as well?
It's a mix of both.
Okay.
A lot of publishers are starting to send me ebooks, which I appreciate because it's uncluttering my house mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Yeah.
So
you know, the only thing is though, Sarah, I don't like it when they send you PDFs. As far as I'm concerned, that's not an ebook.
No, I don't consider that an ebook either, because it's unwieldy in an e-reader, how to read it. I mean, you might as well just, I don't know. I don't like that. It's gotta be, you know, Mobi or EPUB, I think, to really qualify. And it really should be both. I mean, you know,
are they actively sending you the file, or do you have to go to NetGalley?
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. A lot of them are starting to realize that if they send me ebooks, I'll read them faster. Mm. So they'll email me and say, here's the ebook. And then a lot of them are just sending me over to NetGalley. By the way, you can download it over on NetGalley. So here you go.
I'm not a fan of NetGalley, so.
Oh, I don't mind it. They figured account problems out, so.
Yeah, it's better than it was, Patrick. I'll say that, because a couple of years ago, the first time I tried it, I didn't really care for it either. But it's much better now. The only problem now, and I don't know if you've had this, and like you said, sometimes, Sarah. So I'm assuming you're auto approved from a bunch of the publishers at this point, where you could just request whatever they. And I'm auto approved through Orbit Tour and Angry Robot, and I think maybe that's it. Maybe, oh, and the 47 North, that's the name of the Amazon.
Yeah.
So I'm auto-approved for that. So anything that they put up, I could just go and download, because we have such a wide influence with Functional Nerds. So they're just like, that guy books, because that's money in the bank. But no, but I've noticed that I feel like 6 months ago or maybe a year ago, there was lots of stuff up on NetGalley, and I feel like there's not nearly as much up there as there was. I don't know if they're like sort of scaling back ebooks again, because for a while they were sort of afraid of putting ebooks out there for review. Then it seemed like there was a lot more, and now it seems like it's a little less again. I don't know. What's your experience with that, Sarah?
Well, I don't know how it works, but for example, Orbit will send me an email once a month with all of the books that I can download that are on NetGalley. And mm-hmm. if I click on the link that she sends me in the email, I can find the books. Mm-hmm. If I just go to NetGalley and click on Orbit, I won't see them.
Oh.
So I think a lot of books are like that.
Oh, well, you know, we're off here. I'll have to, because I don't get that email. So maybe that's the problem. Because at one point, I think Orbit had a ton of stuff up there. Now I don't see as much stuff from Orbit, so maybe I need
to... Yeah, they put just about everything they're going to release in the following month up on NetGalley, and uh-huh. they'll send out an email to the reviewers and let you click on the links. But if you just go to NetGalley and look, it won't be there.
Hmm. I have to find who that is, because if they auto-approved me, then they probably want me to get the... Yeah, send it to me. Well, yeah. That'd be great, yeah. Because I'll be like, I want those books! Because I like Orbit has a pretty good batting average in my opinion, so I really like their stable of books. So, okay, well, you know, we'll get back into that in a minute, but I think we should move on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Sarah, why don't you go first? What's your pick this week?
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
I started reading this book and I really didn't expect to like it, because it's like got zero things that I'm interested in it. I don't care about Japan. No offense. I'm not into anime. I just haven't gotten into that. I'm not into martial arts. I don't care, and I can't put this one down.
Did you guys just hear Django Wexler's heartbreak?
I know. Isn't that sad? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just like some people don't care about Tanzania. I just don't care about Japan, and it's fantastic. So It's called Daughter of the Sword, and I hate saying author's names because I always say I'm wrong, but it's Steve B-E-I-N, B-N? I don't know, whatever. But it's the first book in a series that he's writing, and it's really good, really good. Kind of urban fantasy, kind of whodunit, kind of historical, really good.
Cool. Who's the publisher?
It is Rock.
Oh, very good. Cool. All right. My pick this week.
This is the second book, so.
Oh, cool.
There you go.
Cool. My pick this week is a book, but
whoa,
it's not
whoa,
a science fiction.
Whoa, sorry. Sarah, you didn't actually say what you liked about the book or why this particular book in a sort of a genre that you don't really care for grabbed you.
So the author, I guess, is some really high up dude in martial arts who knows what he's talking about. And he's written the history, and it's kind of history. You'll have a section of history, and then you'll have a section of modern day, and then Japan. And in the modern day, it's this lady cop in an area where there are not lady cops, who's fighting against sexism and everything else, trying to find out who's murdering these people and who's bringing cocaine into Tokyo and all this stuff. And then in the past sections, you're following these samurais, and they get these swords, and you're just following how these swords impact their lives and their families and all this stuff. And it's just, it's absolutely riveting. The writing is phenomenal, but he's actually made me incredibly interested in Japan. I've been doing a ton of research on Japan now, which is something I never thought I would do, just because it's so interesting. It's kind of an edge of your seat thing, but he's packed so much into just a few hundred pages that it blows my mind. So that's why I like it.
Very cool. Okay.
Cool. I think really all you need to know about Japan is really if you just watch the first G.I. Joe movie, all of the Storm Shadow, Snake Eye stuff. I think, really, in my opinion, I think that's probably, you know, everything you need. I was just thinking when you talk about the swords and stuff, I just remember like those like flashback scenes with the kids. I enjoyed that movie, but I realize it's ridiculous. But anyway, okay. My pick this week is a book. It is not a science fiction book. It is by an author named Colson Whitehead, and it is called The Noble Hustle, Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death. And Colson Whitehead has a couple of novels out. This is a sort of... just like a true life experience that he had where he was hired by, I think it was Grantland, that website Grantland, which is related to ESPN. He likes to play poker, and they basically offered him like, look, we'll front you the money to go play in the World Series of Poker, which is the seat, I think, is $10,000. And go and do that and then write about it. And so he was supposed to write an article for Grantland, which I guess he did, but then he wrote a whole book about his experience. And I'm really a sucker for books about poker. I was one of those people that when there was like the poker boom 6-7 years ago or whenever it was, I was into it. And my wife and I used to watch it on TV all the time, which I know anybody I talk to like, isn't that boring? And I'm like, I guess it was, but that was like, it's kind of meditative and kind of fun. Like, we don't really watch it anymore, but for one point we did. And I had friends where we would get together and play poker. And for one of my friend's bachelor parties, we went to Atlantic City and we all did like $100 buy-in and had a private table and played. And I just really like it. I couldn't do it. I think it's boring, but there's something about sort of the mental game of it and the strategy and the perseverance. Cause I think if you play these long games of poker, it's really about I think good poker players, you fold like most of your hands. Like, so it's a lot of just waiting around for cards, but then there's bluffing and then there's, I don't know, there's a lot that goes into it. And I find it extraordinarily interesting. And he's a great writer and funny and self-deprecating and, yeah, I just really enjoyed the book. Yeah, so it's by Colson Whitehead, and it's called The Noble Hustle, Poker, Beef Jerky, and Death. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Dear Bookworm Blues, yada, yada, yada. I've been writing insert title here for 8 years. Last night I finished and published it. Can you review it? Yada, yada, yada. Dude, bro, author man. I actually get those too, Sarah, just so you understand. I get a lot of those. That's from Sarah's Facebook post. I'm actually, my pick this week is going to be, if you can't tell, I know Sarah from the SF Signal podcast, and I'm just enjoying giving her a hard time. Da Vinci's Demons Season 2, which I've been catching up on my DVR. I haven't watched a whole lot of TV lately, but I don't know if you saw Da Vinci's Demons Season 1. It's all about a young Da Vinci in Florence. And, you know, he's kind of involved in saving Florence from Rome, from the Catholic Church, who is trying to assert their influence over the Medicis. And the Medicis essentially hire him to be their war engineer. And they want him because they're a small little country to, you know, be able to, or a small little city, to be able to help them protect themselves from Rome and the Pope, who are trying to take, you know, total control over everything. Mm-hmm. And season one ended on a cliffhanger, and season two is all about his... they resolve the cliffhanger. I won't give any spoilers, but they do resolve the cliffhanger. They don't do it immediately. It takes them an episode, maybe an episode and a half, to sort of resolve that. And then it's about Da Vinci's obsession with this mystery that was threaded throughout the first season, which is something called the Book of Leaves, which is supposed to be an ancient book that the church wants suppressed. And there's like a secret society of people who want it to be in the right hands, and they think Da Vinci is the right hands, and it's supposed to have, you know, all the ancient knowledge of the ancient world and everything. And so it's his quest to find that book. And there's other things going on, you know. Rome is still trying to take over Florence, and the Medicis are kind of on their own now. So,
Is it like the Rambaldi device?
A little bit. It does have that flavor, to be honest with you. And you have things like, you know, suddenly Da Vinci realizes, hey, the Earth revolves around the sun. That explains so much, you know. And he just has these revelations and stuff. And he did it. He did a blood transfusion. Because he figured if this person's dying because they don't have enough blood, what I need to do is replace the blood. I'll replace it with my own. Mm-hmm. And he figures out how to, you know, do a blood transfusion. So stuff like that. Yeah. It can be kind of fun.
And let's not get this. I have not watched the show, but is this not only a young Da Vinci, but is this a young, sexy Da Vinci? Because I don't know how interested I am in watching it if it's not a young, sexy Da Vinci.
I would say that, yes, it probably would appeal to certain people, yes. Okay. Now, I'll say this. The first season had a lot of, Skinemax-type scenes in it, you know, which seems to be the norm on cable shows these days. Season two has been a lot tamer.
Okay.
There hasn't been quite as much of that, which shows that maybe they're trying to balance it a little bit better and not go for the Game of Thrones audience. A lot more political intrigue going on in season two.
So many good shows. I mean, and you know, I made a reference to Alias, and I watched the first two seasons of Alias, and then this is like, you know, because that show was on a while ago, and this is like pre-Netflix when it was on. Now it's up on Netflix, and it's one of those things where I'm sort of in the same boat with Chuck, where I watched like the first two seasons of Chuck, but I never watched the rest of it, and I never watched the rest of Alias. And it's like, I'd like to go and watch the rest of those, but I have no idea what's going on. I probably need to go back and like watch the first two seasons. I mean, I don't know how timeline wise, how necessary that would be, but I should watch some of the early episodes just to, and I'm just like, eh. It's too much work.
Well, and there are certain things that Ben Affleck has ruined. Daredevil. he ruined Jennifer Gardner. So if you go through and you watch the first four seasons of Alias, you'll see her pre-Ben Affleck when she was still cool.
Mm-hmm.
And awesome.
And she's not cool by the fifth season?
No, because at that point she's pregnant with his child in the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And they explain it away, obviously.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because either the fourth season or the fifth season is when she met Ben Affleck on the horrible movie Daredevil, which no one apparently remembers, as they're saying, ooh, cool, he's going to be Batman.
I didn't mind Daredevil. No, that's cool. No, I got to go back and watch this because I like those movies. But anyway, so anyway, let's get back to our conversation with Sarah about blogging and book reviewing. So, you were talking about, you know, your mix of different books and different. So, what I want to ask is, what obviously you've probably been a big reader and a prolific reader and a fast reader for a long time.
Well, and she lives in the heart of the science fiction community there up in Utah.
Oh yeah, let me tell you.
So what was the impetus to start your blog? How did that get rolling?
It's quite a boring story, actually. I was a senior in college. I was about ready to graduate with my degree, and I started reading other things in textbooks again, and I naturally gravitated back to fantasy and science fiction, and I would read these books and tell my husband, oh my God, this is amazing, and he'd look at me like, I don't care. And so I decided to start a website and talk to the internet and pretend like someone cared about my excitement, and that's how my website started. And I called it Bookworm Blues because I'm a bookworm, and I was sad that nobody in my real life cared. So that's it. It's not that glamorous.
I think I've told you before, Sarah, my family, if I try to talk about any of this stuff, they just go, that's space shit. No one cares about that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I get to.
When are you going to grow up and talk about football and
yeah,
spreadsheets?
Yeah, so you know. But I think, so you're talking about how you wanted to sort of, you talk to nobody and hope that somebody listens. And obviously people listen now. You have a very well-respected blog that I think all the publishers are, you know, are very aware of the audience that you built and the insight that you have into these books. So I think what you're to be commended for is that a lot of people were like, I'm going to start a review blog. But because you're so prolific and so consistent, as I mentioned, but I think before we started recording, you know, I think you're the book reviewer. Well, you're definitely the book reviewer that I tweet. You're probably the person I tweet the most because you have probably three or four book reviews every week. So, and I just like to tweet that stuff out because I think you do a great job writing them. But I think, you know, I feel our job, not our job, but like I feel one of the things that I like to do in this community is to let people know that there's all these great books out there. And obviously that's what you're doing. So I want to just try to spread that more because I feel like the more people read these reviews and see interviews and listen to podcasts, the healthier our community comes, the more great books that we can get. So what do you think? Obviously you're doing it and you're keeping on. How do you account for your consistency? Because a lot of people do this, but they're not nearly consistent. Where does that come from, your consistency?
I guess I'm just weird. I don't know. There's a few reasons why. I have a lot of health issues with like cancer and my joint disorder. And
cancer sucks.
It's been 4 years of hell, and that's exactly how long my blog has been going, is 4 years. I started it 5 months before I was diagnosed with cancer for the first time. And I think my health issues are why I read so much, because it just helps me to get out of my skin and to, you know, live somewhere else for a while. It helps put my life and my issues into perspective. And so in that way, the reason I read so much is entirely greedy. It just keeps me sane. It keeps me, you know, grounded in my life sucks, but at least I don't know someone who got hung by their intestines from the nearest castle. So I'm doing pretty good in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps me. It helps me stay grounded. And that's why. And also, I kind of feel like if I don't review a ton, then if I don't keep talking about the things that I like and don't like, then I'll lose my enthusiasm. And that's something that I don't ever really want to lose, because this genre has helped me so much. I don't ever want to stop giving back to it.
So. Well, that's wonderful. And I think many people who maybe would be in a similar situation that you're in with your health issues would do the opposite, would just be like, oh, I can't do this because I don't have time because I'm sick or what have you. And I think it's wonderful, and I imagine that maybe why many people follow what you do, because maybe they're having their own challenges in life. You know, I think when we have I've thought about this a lot over the years, and no one gets out without any damage. We don't get through this life without damage, because I've mentioned it on the show before. You know, my son is 8 years old and he's autistic, and we've had a lot of challenges in our life because of that, and the way that my wife and I have chosen to help him is pretty extreme compared to a lot of other. I'm a teacher, and I teach a lot of children on the autism spectrum as well. And I know a lot of parents don't do what my wife and I do. I joked around about this one-bedroom apartment that we're in. Well, we're in a one-bedroom apartment because this town has an excellent autistic program in the schools.
No, so, you're in that one-bedroom apartment because you and your wife are awesome parents.
Well, that's – thank you, Patrick. But that's my point, is that I don't know a lot of people who would be just willing to do that. We've done a lot of things. And I've had periods over the past 8 years where I've been very down and very – angry and very depressed, and it's like, you know, why do we have these challenges, but then I realize, like, everybody has their, and I think especially with children, what I've just noticed with, if you have children, like, no one gets off scot-free with their kids. You're gonna have something going on. I have a friend that who is an older friend of mine, and his son, when he was 19, went away to school and was this kid. It was a musician friend, and his son was a musician, and he played drums with his father, and he was a great kid, super smart, world ahead of him. Went away to music school, just got into the wrong crowd, got into heroin, and died. Like at age 19.
Wow.
And it was devastating, as you can imagine, to the parents. And this was happening, you know, this is about 5 years ago. And I just turned to my wife and I'm like, if you have kids, it's like, it's never easy. And anything can ever happen. But the thing is, like, are you going to sit and wallow about it? Or are you going to realize that, you know what, everyone's got their own challenges. Because really all life is just making the best of it. And I think it's awesome that you are sharing your experiences, because you don't just get on there and talk about, like, oh, woe is me, but you do share your experiences. And I think that's powerful. And I think, you know, it helps connect the community, because everybody is in it. You know, we're all human beings. We're not just readers and writers and musicians and whatever. We're all that.
My brother told me, my disabled older brother, we were talking about this, and this is kind of the whole reason I started Special Needs and Strange Worlds, but he told me he reads to remind himself that he's not alone. And I think fundamentally that's probably why we all read, mm-hmm. for some reason or another. We read for a lot of reasons, but we're not alone. And that kind of connects us all. And I think that's probably a more emotional take on everything than people are, you know, willing to have most of the time. But I try to bring that out in my reviews and in the way I read and the things I talk about, because I just, there's something connecting us. We live all over the world, and this community is so tight knit despite our distance. There's books that connect us, but why do they connect us? It's because we all enjoy them. We all get something out of it. And I, I like that about the genre. I like that about the community too. And I like exploring it.
I think that's an excellent point about not feeling alone. And I think in novels and in our case, our fantasy and science fiction novels, it's a medium different than music or film or anything else where you can go, an author can go so deep into, and meeting a lot of these authors and having them on the podcast, and you realize they're really no different than us. They really aren't. And they, you know, when I've read books by people I've met, it's always like, oh yeah, like this is so even if you don't meet them and have any sort of personal relationship with them, it's, when you're alone with your thoughts, like this is where you go. And I think a novel is the most effective, you know, form for feeling connected. And you spoke about it in the beginning of the show today, where if there's a book you're really liking, you actually don't rush through it because you don't want it to finish.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, aren't there a couple of books that you haven't finished on purpose?
Yeah.
What haven't you finished? Now you have to tell us.
Well, I finally finished the Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn series.
She had been holding off on that for a long time.
Years.
Years, John.
And it was a conversation with Rob Bedford. I think you guys just had him on.
Yeah.
That it kind of made me realize it's time to put my big girl pants on and just finish this thing.
So hold on. You were on a podcast.
I know.
With Tad Williams. And that didn't spur you to finish the book? It had to be Rob Bedford?
Yeah, isn't that sad?
Oh. Sarah was on the podcast that Jamie and I did with Kate Elliott and Tad Williams and Felix Gilman. Mm-hmm. And even that did not spur her to finish the Memory, Sorrow, and Thorns series. But it had to be Rob Bedford. That's hilarious.
I think you'll both appreciate this knowing Rob, because I was just going to make a joke about, you know, the power of Rob Bedford. And obviously his name, you know, sounds a lot like Robert Redford. So as when we had Rob on the show a couple weeks ago, we were talking about how Rob and I live pretty close to each other, and we meet up, you know, somewhat frequently now. And so anytime I go out, and my wife, I don't think my wife has ever actually seen Rob Bedford or anything, but anytime I go and meet Rob, my wife's like, I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to meet Rob tonight. And she's like, oh, you're meeting up with dreamy Rob Bedford. So Rob, if you're listening, my wife refers to you as dreamy Rob Bedford.
So what else, Sarah? Are there other series and books out there that you have not finished on purpose?
Well, yeah, another Tad Williams one is my current problem. It's the Shadow March books. Uh-huh. Those ones, I have the fourth book sitting in my bedroom. I've read 10 pages of it, and then I thought, I just don't want this to end. And it's I've closed the cover, and it's just looking at me, and I'm looking at it, and it's a standoff. So that's my current one.
I'm going to look right now, because you mentioned a phrase that I think would make an excellent title for your next blog, if you want to do it.
Thinking in Crap?
No, I would Big Girl Pants. I do not see, let's see, biggirlpants.com. Oh, it's not coming up. It's available. This is going to go up in 2 weeks, so if you want to get the jump on registering that name, Sarah, I think you should. You could just, and that can be your blog about books that you don't want to finish. You can have
biggirlpants.com.
So, Sarah, there was a con that you were trying to get me to drive up there for.
Yes.
What was that con? Has that already happened?
Yeah, it already happened.
And
I went to it.
Which con was it?
It was WesterCon.
And you had a blast.
I had a blast, yeah. And it was a lot of
was
fun.
That your first con?
It was, yes. I've been too sick to really leave my house and interact with the community for a few years now. This is the first time I'm actually feeling good enough to do things, and So that was my first convention. It was kind of small, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how to judge these things. But it was fun. I met a lot of authors. Peter Arulian spent the whole day showing me around, which I was amazed that I didn't annoy him and frighten him away. But he was very nice and showed me the ropes. So it was fun.
That's awesome. Was he able to get you an Xbox One?
No.
Ugh, bastard.
No, unfortunately.
Bastard.
I love Peter.
Did he turn you on to prog rock?
No.
No. That's surprising because well, you know, it was really funny. I ended up getting, I think it was Rob Bedford who ended up tagging me on this because on Twitter, there was a conversation between, I believe it was Daniel Abraham, Mike Cole, and a couple of other folks. And they ended up talking about metal. Oh, I know, because Mike Cole put one of his old pictures up. Mike Cole had like really long hair, and anybody who's ever seen pictures of Mike Cole online, he's a military guy, he has like a crew cut and everything. But back in the day, he was in like metal bands, and he had like long, luxurious hair. And so when he posted that, I guess they were talking about who's metal, who's talked, and then Daniel Abraham comes in with like, I've never talked about metal this much without Peter Arulian around. And I ended up getting tagged on that as well, because if there's metal in the science fiction community, I think Peter Arulian's the first person you think of, and then I'm probably the second because of that. But I love Peter. I think he's just a fantastic guy and does so many cool things, and I'm hoping his next book comes out soon. It's long overdue. So
because he had to work on the Xbox One.
Yeah. Well, and he's got a family, and he still does some music, and he's just a busy dude. You know, he's got a lot of cool things going on. I've mentioned it before. Peter, about a year or two ago, Peter and I were considering doing like a music kind of podcast, and we talked about it one night. We Skyped. We're like, we should really do this. And then by the end of the conversation, we're like, who are we fooling? When are we going to have time to do this? like this, you know, I mean, someday maybe that'll happen. But it's like, you work for Xbox and write novels for tour and sing and have a family. And yeah, so it's hard to do everything you want. But anyway, cool. All right. Well, Patrick, anything else you want to ask before maybe we wrap it up? How can I torture Sarah?
What's the painting on the wall there behind you?
Oh, you know what? I don't even know. This is my husband's stuff. I don't know. Something. Video game-ish.
That's good, though. We like video games.
Yeah. Well, he's a gamer. I'm the reader, so it works.
I see.
So have you tried to get him to read any of the video game tie-in novels?
A little bit, but he... You know, he finished his first book that he's read since like seventh grade yesterday, and he loved it. And it was Ready Player One, and now he's all looking up books that are like Ready Player One and trying to find other stuff. So I'm very excited about that.
Now, I think Wes Chu's books get compared to Ready Player One, I know. So that might be one you might want to recommend Wesley Chu's.
Did you recommend Ready Player One to him?
No, he just came up to me and said, I downloaded Ready Player One. Have you heard of it? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I'm 10% in. And I thought I just about passed out. So a very exciting bonding moment for us.
Well, that is a great book for someone who's into video games.
Yeah, he loved it. He loved it. And I think I'm going to have to read it now because I never thought he would love a book. So.
Interesting. Well, you should also have him check out, there's a Netflix, there's a series called Video Game High School.
Oh.
He'd probably
Have him look at it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, then let us wrap it up for today. Saras, thank you so much for coming on. It was a delight having you on, and we'll have to have you back more frequently again. And once again, for Sarah, go to her website, bookwormblues.net. She also writes the Special Needs in a Strange World column over at SF Signal, so check that out as well. And you can follow her on Twitter at bookwormblues. Anything else you want to tell people about before we wrap it up, Sarah?
No, just thanks for having me. You guys flattered me a lot. So thank you.
That's what we do. We flatter people. That's it.
For me, it's just remember, Sarah, we had you on before any horsey podcasts that might have invited you. You were here first. Just remember that.
That's true. That's true. I'll have to tell them that tomorrow.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Well, I did a theme song for that one too, so it's all right, yeah, for me, just check out my music, johnanilio.com. Follow me on Twitter at johnanilio and Patrick.
ATFMB, I will be at Mile High Con. I'm doing live recording there. I'm doing all kinds of stuff, hopefully, for them. So come to Mile High Con in Denver and support the Colorado community. Come on now. And I did want to say, Sarah was talking about how, you know, how reading connects everyone, and that's why she likes to read. I like to read books so that I could text John DiNardo and tell him that I read something that he hasn't, so that he goes, damn it! Damn it! I wanted to read that one. Oh man, I can't believe you read that one.
I don't know. I was wondering when you'd get a dig in for good old DiNardo.
Well, and it's funny that my DiNardo voice is also like a Jerry Seinfeld voice. What is it about science fiction? No. Just...
Alrighty. Okay, everybody. Well, have a great week, everyone. We'll
I'll
see
get
you
a text
next.
About that now. By the way, John.
Yeah.
He'll listen to this. He's like, oh sure, mention that. You bastard. Yeah. You bastard.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Have a good week. We'll talk to you.
Gunsmoke.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.